Welcome back for another very hot episode of Two Please. I'm your host, Abhin.
And I'm your co-host, Rohit.
And I didn't mean hot as in regarding the people that are in this bloody conversation. It is the middle of peak summer. I am boiling. I'm just going to try and keep my shit together for the remainder of this episode, which we have just begun.
Why are you wearing a tight shirt then?
It's not tight. It's linen. It's just like, this is the most comfortable shirt I could possibly get. It's just that, I don't know, dude. I think I'm getting
too buff.
Basically, my old wardrobe is not fitting me. Very sad stories. But anyway, today we're back on a topic that we've discussed. It's junk food movies for the soul, part two. Now, why this episode is back? Well, because it keeps popping up in our daily lives in some way or the other. A couple of episodes ago, when we were talking about, was it Dune? I think, yeah, on the sixth love language, we were talking about Dune. And Rohit mentioned how he tried to show this to Poonam, his wife. And at the time, she said, what the hell? I don't really want to think. And that sparked a conversation, right? So you could possibly call this a one big Poonam tribute episode, much like the last couple of episodes, because
this podcast is turning into an excuse to lambast her. No?
I know. It's fine. Not that she listens to it. So take what you can get. So what I'm basically saying is that there are people like Poonam and us on some days where we just come back home after a long day and we want to watch something that isn't intellectually engaging, that's basically extremely stupid in certain parts. They can be good movies. They can't also be good movies. But you just view them for your pure entertainment pleasure and nothing else. It's like eating a nice big box of like a nice full pizza, right? And then just regretting it later. This is basically what these movies are like.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have to be bad movies. I'd like to think two or maybe three of the movies I have are middle to good. It's that you're not watching them because they're high cinema. You're just like, I know the beats of this movie. I know.
Exactly.
And these are probably movies you've seen multiple times and, you know, you start getting comfortable with them 4 or 5 viewings in. It's like, yeah, I know what's going to happen. I derive comfort from it. Even if it's like a thriller, right? There's no shock value in it for you anymore. You're just like, I like the beats of the story. I'm just going to watch it play out again for the nth time because it makes me happy. And yeah, I mean, just to close the, you know, point on Poonam, we used her as a way to make the point, but this is a very universal phenomenon, right? All of us have those movies where, like, I just want to watch what I know.
Yeah.
I heard you had some honorable mentions, Abhin.
I did, actually. So what I did for this episode is I reached out into our community and asked a few people what their go-to junk food movies were like. I gave them context, gave them a few examples of the kind of films we discussed in the past. And I got back some very interesting answers, which we'll kind of go through. Initially, a lot of people misunderstood the assignment. They thought I was asking what their favorite junk food was while watching a movie. And I was just like, guys, that's not it. But anyway, we came back and I got a couple of interesting entries. Most people say TV shows, but I think a couple of them being NCIS, which I think is the perfect junk food piece of media to ever consume. You just land, watch some random episode about a dude getting arrested and bounce.
Do these procedurals give you the sense? I've never really watched, you know, the whole NCIS, CSI, Miami, New York, whatever. Do these procedurals give you the feeling of intellectualism while deep down you know their shit? I mean, what is the appeal of
it? I feel like it's a soap opera masquerading as like a crime investigation series. That's kind of what people really tune in for. People love drama. And I think it's a great bit in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, right? Which they parody like procedurals. Yeah. They have a show there called Crime Scene, Scene of the Crime.
I mean, again, another movie that would have definitely made into the list if we hadn't covered it like 213 times already.
Yeah, dude, there are so many of them. We were doing our lists and I was like, Rohit, we've done this on this episode, we've done this on that episode. I'm sure even the current list we've mentioned somewhere, I'm pretty damn sure. I've been sitting the last couple of days doing the gym, I've been sitting and listening to episodes to see what we've covered.
My initial three movies for this topic, As a joke, obviously, I told Abin, and he said, okay, what are your junk food movies for the episode? I said, Schindler's List, Manchester by the Sea, and Come and See. Or the alternate, I could have swapped in Grave of the Firefly. I was like, no, man, I'm kidding. That would be a somber episode.
That would be a sad, sad, sad episode. Okay, let's not dwell on sad moments. Let's keep the ball rolling.
Yes.
Someone else, Samir, said Mudalvan and / Nayak was a film he really enjoyed going back to.
Yeah, nice.
Then somebody else, I think Anmol said Snatch, which again I get. It's not like highbrow, but it is bloody hilarious, right? I consider it a very good film. The only reason why it's not on this list is because there's a whole episode dedicated to Guy Ritchie.
Snatch is the movie, single movie I've watched the most. Like, what is the movie I've rewatched the most? It is Snatch. So, again, if not for the Guy Ritchie episode, that would have definitely been top.
The same goes for Gone Girl. I watched it again four days later, but we've spoken about it so much. And if I bring it up, Rohit feels like he wants to stab me. So,
yeah, this is like cultural zeitgeist at this point. Yeah. You have to have Gone Girl and cultural zeitgeist in the every episode.
Yeah, I miss you, Gone Girl. The other was KGF, which I don't know, man. That seems like a lot of... I know it's like mass entertainment, but it's a long movie. I don't know if that's the kind of film you want to sit through at the end of the day.
Commitment.
Yeah. Then a lot of Adam Sandler films, right? Happy Gilmore, Meet the Fockers, Grown Ups. I think this is the perfect definition of these kind of films. 1.5 hours, stupid humor, Adam Sandler, done, dusted.
I mean, Meet the Fockers, not technically Adam Sandler, but in the same humor.
Exactly.
Has the
funniest child joke I've seen ever. I remember, I still think about it and laugh. It's when the child starts saying asshole, the child's first word is asshole.
No, 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 you don't want to say that word, though. We don't want to say that word because that's a bad word. No, no, no.
Another film that popped up was Welcome, which we've kind of took off this list because we've spoken about it very recently. Rohit had it on his, but he, I mean, this a lot of people came back. I mean,
yeah.
And they were like...
I tried to make Poonam watch Welcome recently. She hadn't watched it. Firstly, I was like, how?
Wow, yeah.
How has this gone past you? But she hadn't. And first half an hour or so, I mean, the movie takes time to pick up, right? And yeah. I remember when you're making somebody watch a movie, you're looking at them, really, how are they? She was watching, she wasn't reacting much, and like to her credit, she didn't like diss it. I was like, damn, the first half an hour, like 40 minutes of the movie is rough viewing. Like, yeah, you really need to pay your dues to get to the funny parts.
But once it kicks off, I mean, you need to, like, it has a bumpy start. It has Katrina Kaif's bad dubbing. So once, because you know what she sounds like now, like, every time you hear her on screen in the film, it's kind of like nails on a chalkboard. So it's a little off-putting. But once it takes off, you are just laughing stupidly throughout the film. So I was in hospital I was in the hospital last year at the end of November, and I was admitted because of dengue, and I was having an overall shitty day, and then Welcome was playing on television because I didn't have my laptop or anything. Welcome was playing on television, and my sister and I were in the room, and she put it on, and we just laughed stupidly at it for a good hour, especially the last hour with the whole funeral sequence and the house.
Tum kab aaye?
सबसे पहले मैं ही आया.
It's just so silly. The movie is so silly.
What's his son's name? Mickey. No, Mickey or something. Oh, my son.
Oh my god.
I think Anis Bazmi is the Indian variant for any so all junk food films. We had Mubarak on the last one, and we have Welcome, I think, is the gold standard. And to top off the list was Top Gun Maverick. I mean, I get it. The story is no great shakes. You're sitting there to watch Tom Cruise school some young cadets and throw in a massive spectacle piece while he does it. So
absolutely agree. On that note, again, Poonam and I tried to give Fighter a fighting chance. Get like 20 minutes. It's not a bad movie. It's firstly, it's the first half an hour or whatever you watch is straight Top Gun ripoff, right? Which is fine. If you're going to make a movie about fighter planes, the comparisons are inevitable. It's just the for lack of a better term, the Indian melodrama, which you know will be injected into the storyline, is a little heavy.
Did you finish the movie?
No.
Yeah. So I'm going to I went and watched this movie in theaters with my folks. It felt like one big advertisement for whatever Hrithik Roshan's skincare routine was. And towards the end, it fully lent into a propaganda piece, which it really is. You start to see it play out. And I thought Siddharth Anand was above it because I'd seen Pathaan, and Pathaan was not a great movie, but it never took sides and never beat the drum that a lot of these propaganda films have been beating for the last 2 to 3 years. Oh my God, it lost me. Towards the end, there's a moment that's supposed to be played for thalis and laughs. And claps. I just burst out laughing. I couldn't take it. It was so badly done. I have no idea how this movie made so much money. But now it's on Netflix. People can see it for the shit show that it really is.
Yeah, that line where something, Sone Hire say something and Tirange say better, kafan nahi hota. And he says that, and I'm like, damn, bro. You guys are on a campfire, chilling, you're having beer. Why the fuck did you have to drop this shit? People are relaxing.
Fuck, it's weird. It's a little on the nose, and I'm not a fan of these kind of films. I think it's widely, if you listen to the podcast, you know. But yeah, I mean, Fighter, Top Gun Maverick, very good. See, Top Gun Maverick, there's no nationalism, nothing. There's an enemy. Where they're from, God knows. They're just there.
The enemy is in the mountains. Which mountains? We don't know.
They're just enemies, and there's a mountain. They have no calls. They have no flags, nothing. They don't even speak. I don't think the enemy has a single line of dialogue.
It's just...
Yeah, exactly. And that's it, yeah. Those are the honorable mentions. Now let's quickly get into the episode. Let's start the show. Okay, my friend, Let us get into it. You have three, I have three. Back to the old routine we go. You want to kick us off?
Okay. So my first movie after... Welcome got rejected because it was covered already, and Dil Dhadakne Do got rejected because it was covered already. I want to talk about, I'm going to go back a little farther in time. The 97, 98 movie, Kamal Haasan, starrer, directed, whatever, Chachi Chaar Sau Bees. Again, it is a remake of his Tamil movie, Avai Shanmugi, which... I don't know if it was concurrently shot order and the details are hazy, but very briefly, the story is about, and also both of them, are ripoffs of Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah.
And, but whatever, right? I mean, I'm going to keep the Mrs. Doubtfire comparison away because Kamal Haasan is as singular to Indian cinema as I would say Robin Williams is to Hollywood, right? So, it would do a disservice to dilute what Chachi Chaar Sau Bees as a product is purely by saying, hey, you know, everything they've taken is ripoff. Because, again, they have contextualized it to Indian audiences. There's certain Indianisms which the movie has and a certain flavor to it that Kamal Haasan brings. For those of you who haven't watched either movie and don't know what the story is about, Kamal Haasan is a struggling actor, choreographer-actor, married to Tabu. They have a kid, and then, financial struggles and other struggles drive the couple apart. And as Tabu comes from a well-off family, she gets custody of the kid. And Kamal Haasan is sort of missing his child, missing his wife, and he wants to sort of find a way to be around her. When he finds out that the family wants a caretaker or somebody like a babysitter for the kid, he dresses up as this oldish auntie or chachi sort of inserts himself into their household, eventually solving problems beyond just taking care of the kid and, usual happily ever after sort of ending. And stuff like that. What really... So firstly, I watched this before I watched Mrs. Doubtfire, right? So
yeah.
For me, this is the first story, or this is the first time I was introduced to the beats of the story. So to me, it seemed very unique. I was like, wow. And I had never, for lack of a better term, I don't know if that is the right term here, seen any actor cross-dress on screen before, right? Even at that age, I remember not being surprised because I was like, yeah, it's Kamal Haasan. If anyone would do it, it would be Kamal Haasan. That man is a chameleon. And what's there that he can't do, right? So I wasn't surprised, but I was like, hey, it's nice. This is like I get to see something that I've not seen before, and seems like a funny movie. And standalone, it has some really good humor, right? Again, keeping the comparisons apart, there are some situations, some lines, characters, like especially the chef or the cook played by Nasir. Anything he does on screen is hilarious, right? All of his scenes, all of his interactions are... Amrish Puri is outstanding in the movie. One of the few comedic roles that he's done. He's primarily known as a baddie, but here he's shown, especially the scenes where he's like lecherously pursuing Chachi is hilarious, very unexpected turn from him, and probably makes it all that funnier. I mean, there's so many scenes, like him riding the bullet on the bridge at the end, him just doing very masculine things in that dress, right? As there's a lot of physical humor in the film, and Kamal Haasan pulls it off really well. Tabu, as usual, knocks it out of the park. Again,
young Tabu, story, very, very young Tabu, no?
Very young.
The movie's old.
Yeah. So, again, very, once you've seen it a couple of times, you know exactly where the story is heading. So, it's very comfort viewing. Yet, at the same time, it's not mindless. There's smart humor, there's a lot to engage with, which is what I like about it.
It's been ages since I watched this movie. I think I watched Mrs. Doubtfire and this movie in the same year. So I kind of had the same, you know, that craze to catch it in Indian cinema was very high at the time. And I think during the 90s, Kamal Haasan had kind of transcended into the superstar status. Like in the 80s, he was this romantic hero guy. But in the 90s, he was developing into this larger-than-life persona. He was doing a bunch of things. I think Nayagan was also somewhere around this time. Is it not?
Yeah, 93, 94 or I guess.
Yeah, so generally, like he was taking chances. He did a movie called Hey Ram, which he directed and he starred in.
Yeah.
It was very much like he was on top of his game, and Chachi Charsobis was one of those films that came through. And I don't think, I mean, a lot of actors have since...
Hey, did I say he directed Chachi Charsobis? I'm so sorry. Yeah. Vishal Bharadwaj.
Is it?
I know Vishal, or Vishal Bharadwaj gave the music. I know he's involved in it. No, it is Kamal Haasan directed, but Vishal Bharadwaj gave the music. Sorry.
Yeah, no. Vishal Bharadwaj's debut was Machis, no? Which is what I...
Yes.
So he was very much that guy, that actor-director combo that was ripping through. That was transcending both Tamil and Hindi cinema. Not a lot of actors. I think Rajnikant, to a certain degree, had done movies in Hindi that he was famous for. And the second was possibly Kamal Haasan.
Yeah.
I remember really laughing at Nasir's performance in the theater. I remember Amrish Puri. The more you speak about it, the more like jogs my memory. Has become like one of these timeless Indian classics that people need to check out. Yes, it always has to be compared to the gargantuan performance that is Robin Williams in Mrs. Doubtfire, who kind of kickstarted all of this. But Kamal Haasan, in his own way, holds his own right.
And before we move on to the next movie, just a small point I want to make, right, is I feel in the course of all the episodes we've done, we've not spoken enough about Kamal Haasan, like as much as I would like to, right? Like that man is, honestly, what can he not do, right? He's OG Donald Glover. People talk about Donald Glover being somebody who's like a renaissance man. It's like Kamal Haasan, like done, dusted 20 years ago, please.
Yeah, he's just chilling ever since. He's just like, he's just chilling. Yeah. But okay, let's move on. I wanted to start mine off with Bollywood, but I think you've discussed a fair amount of Bollywood, so I'll keep mine for probably the next or the last entry in this episode. I'll start off with 2008's Twilight. Now, so Rohit is judging me for this. And I need you to understand this. This movie is not good. I don't think the actors involved in this movie don't think it's good. It's like, and the actors in this film have gone on to develop such exciting careers. Kristen Stewart is doing a bunch of really exciting things. She has her latest movie, Love Lies and Bleeding, is currently out in theaters and is getting good reviews. Robert Pattinson, I mean, come on. He is basically in anything and everything at this point, which is really good. He's also Batman. But in 2008, we weren't thinking of these things. 2008, we were thinking, what is Cedric Diggory and their sister from Zathra doing in a movie about a vampire and a human? The first 30, 40 movies of, minutes of this film is pure hilarity, right? Not, because it's just what is being asked of the actors on screen, because the source material is so shit. Now, for those of you unfamiliar with the Twilight series tells the story of a girl named Bella who falls in love with a dude named Edward, which just so happens to be this 100-year-old vampire who is vegetarian. And he comes from a family. And he just so happens to come from a family of vegetarian vampires, right? So, and then there's also a werewolf character in there named Jacob, who is also in love with Bella, and Bella now must
be a furry.
Yeah, who's a furry. and
that's just massacring an already shit stone.
Oh, it gets better, I assure you. And I think they live in the town of Forks somewhere in Washington. And it's this movie is extremely blue. Like, the first film is just this blue palette filled with bad acting performances across the board. But there's so much joy and entertainment to be had that you can't help not look away while this movie starts. I'm going to be very honest. I really love the town setting. I really like where it's set. It seems very peaceful, very quaint.
Yeah, right.
But it's just what is happening with the people in this town is just hilarious. Anna Kendrick is in this, and she's probably the best performance in the entire film. One of her earlier films. Robert Pattinson is trying his best to get fired, because what the hell is he doing in the opening sequence of this film? He just looks constipated all the bloody time. And for me, right, I wasn't really paying much attention to films back. I mean, I was.
Robert Pattinson looks like he really wants to take a shit, but he's unable to, and therefore he's having to pass gas. Kristen Stewart looks like she's just smelt the gas that he's passing. She's like, who the fuck, who farted?
That quivering upper lip thing she does, where she goes all the time. It's like, this is a choice, guys. This is a choice. Like, what are you guys doing? I don't think even the actors can sit and watch it seriously. Robert Pattinson actually spoke about this. He spoke about how, like, he tried to play the character the exact opposite of what was described to him, and he still got the role. And during the filming, because he was being such an ass about it, they're like, dude, you're either going to get fired or we're going to have some real serious conversations about what's happening here. And he kind of knuckled down and finished the film, and then did another three of them, made bank and bounced.
All said and done, he can go back and lampoon them as much as he wants. It is his right. You can't deny that this is same as Radcliffe, right? These movies give him the freedom to pursue whatever creative directions he wanted. He's never had to work for money since. And
exactly.
That's why we've got the Pattinson we've got today, right? Like, you've got Good Time Pattinson, you've got Lighthouse Pattinson because of Twilight.
They're clearly doing their own thing. They're taking creative choices, and this film gave them the financial freedom to do so.
Yeah.
I read the source material back in the day. Okay, quick story. I read the source material back in the day, and I've spoken about this, I think, on prior episodes about how it was because of a girl. And I said, okay, cool, I'll read it. And it was shite. And then she said, no, it gets better. And I said, okay. And it was still shite. And then I was already in too deep, so I had to know how the story ended. So I finished the entire series and have lived in regret ever since.
Same story, same reasons. But I only read I only read one book, and I'm like, is the relationship worth it?
I think by the end of the book, you're just like, is this really worth it? Is this what we have to do?
Yeah. Is this what they mean when they say love is hard? Reading is really hard.
Do I need to know about vampires that shine in the sun like diamonds?
Yeah, I mean, of all, there are so many things to take objection to in the book, right? I think that's probably it. I made this point before. My favorite work of fiction is Dracula. I really like vampire lore. I like the mysticism of it. I like the brooding, dark aspect of it. What vampire lore doesn't have is fucking rainbows.
Oh my god, you're a vampire.
Yeah, and her reading of that line.
Her narration of the entire film, like even the part of the film,
it's
has
so
folks.
Lifeless. So great. Lifeless. Like, is she the vampire? Has she, that, you know, if M. Night Shyamalan had made the movie, that would have been the twist. She was the vampire all along. The clues are right there. Can you not see her face? Can you not see the way she's speaking? She's been dead inside all this time.
The one thing I will give this film, barring the unintentional hilarity, is the score. The soundtrack of this film is very good. I think New Moon kind of even betters it, but here Carter Burrell, I think this was the movie that introduced me to Claire de Lune. I knew I'd heard it in places, but I didn't know what the piece was called. Right. And so this is she, and I remember, and even that also, she Kristen Stewart desperately tries to kill that scene where she's like, Claire de Lune, great. I like Claire de Lune. Oh man. Anyway, it is a train wreck performance that I would like to put out. I tend to sit down and watch at the end of a really long day, and I need to laugh at some shit. This is probably the film I go to. One of the few films I go to.
Yeah, no, fair. I mean, I've also watched. I think I remember watching the movie up until the scene where they all play baseball and. No, just.
You bought a snack.
I will watch paint dry. I can't watch this. So, up until I watched it to that point, gave me enough of a sense, right, to know that this movie's not
going anywhere. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. But I don't know. I'm still, like, for me, the jury's still out on Kristen Stewart. I haven't watched Spencer yet. I haven't found her acting to be as convincing to me yet. Or rather, to me, I haven't been able to. No, she hasn't worked off the Twilight debt in my mind, so to speak. But Pattinson, man, when I watched, like, yes, Batman, he was great. And all the other movies that you mentioned also, I haven't watched Lighthouse yet. So, but even work outside of that, I was like, oh, great. You know, Tenet, obviously, that's the lesser said about it, the better. But when I watched Good Time, for me, when I watched Good Time, I was like, I am all in on Pattinson. This guy.
I think he was also in Life, the one James Dean movie with him and Dane DeHaan. I watched that as well. I think that was the first film I watched after his Twilight run. So yeah, he's just doing what he wants to do. He has Batman to like cover the bills. He's good to go. So yes. Yeah, and the one more thing before. Another glaring thing. People, the vampires in this movie are caked in white makeup or powder, whatever. It gets better in New Moon because I feel in New Moon they got a budget to hire the right kind of makeup people. Everyone in this film is a fine shade of pale, like real pale.
And they should give it some backstory. Like, you should be like, yeah, they're vampires by night and like they're participants in RuPaul's Drag Race by day. Like, that would explain it, right?
It was, yeah, the makeup was so gaudy. It was so, so gaudy. Like, there'd be a disservice to RuPaul's Drag Race. Those people like really put in there. This is just.
Yeah, actually, we should not disrespect RuPaul's Drag Race fashion.
Well, yeah, my goodness, huh? But yeah, let's move on from Twilight and move on to your second.
Yes. The second movie I want to talk about, given that this person is, you know, long overdue, but he is the flavor of the month right now. I'm talking about Cillian Murphy. When he won the Oscar, I remembered, you know, all of his earlier work has now come back into consciousness where people are trying to revisit his earlier films. I realized one of the first movie of his that I watched as way back as a kid was Red Eye. And yes. It used to come on TV a lot, right? It used to come on Star World or one of the, you know, those channels that we used to grow up watching as a kid. So it was my introduction to Rachel McAdams. It was my introduction to Cillian Murphy. It was my introduction to
Wes Craven. Yeah.
It was my introduction to Wes Craven. So when I later watched Scream movies, I was like, oh, this is the Red Eye director.
it's funny how you are the only other person apart from me that associates Cillian Murphy with Red Eye. The first film you've ever seen him is Red Eye. Even when I saw him in Batman Begins, I was like, that's the guy from Red Eye.
Yes.
I remember reading the review for it. Namrata Joshi, who was the reviewer for The Outlook at the time, had reviewed it in like the magazine and when the film had come out. I remember reading about it back then and watching it on television. Like, that's how far old I am. This 2002, 2003?
It's a 2003 or 4 movie.
Somewhere around that time. Yes.
So, like you said, I mean, for me, Cillian Murphy will always be like, that's the first movie of his that comes to mind for me. Yeah, it's very, very un-Wes Craven-like in the sense that there isn't an element of satire or I don't even remember there being any humor in this film. Right, compared to like Scream, Under the Terror and all, there's a lot of an undercurrent of commentary, social commentary, jokes on, none of that in Red Eye. It's a very straightforward, almost like a bottle episode thriller, because like 90% of the movie is just this Red Eye flight that Rachel McAdams and Cillian Murphy's characters are taking. It's two people having a conversation. There's some air hostesses and maybe a couple of other passengers, but I would say 80-85% of the movie is just two people talking to each other, right?
Yeah.
So in that sense, it's almost like a bottle episode or a bottle movie. And very taut thriller. Again, the story is very thin. Cillian Murphy plays this charming assassin whose job is to... his target is her, right? Or is her target her dad? I'm forgetting. But his target is her. He has to kill her. And Rachel McAdams plays this... I'm forgetting, vague executive. She has some role to play. And they're on a flight together. And he tells her that he's on the flight too. Yeah, so his target is, he's like, I'm on this flight. My job is to kill you. Right? You are my job. And the rest of the flight... I remember this was when they started having flight phones. So he's like, your dad is going to be murdered unless you do X, Y, Z.
Exactly.
So he's trying to coerce her to do something. Then she's trying to fight back. So... that's it. Three-line story. But the screenplay, this is a classic case of how screenplay can really take a story and make a movie out of it, right? So the way the interplay of dialogue between them and this, the way it's all constructed is so taut, you're it's impossible for you to tear your eyes away from the screen. And what I want to really make mention of is Red Eye's camera work makes use of Cillian, two aspects of Cillian Murphy. One is those hypnotic eyes. Like he has some of the most unique eyes I've seen. At like gray and a hint of green, blue, depending on...
very piercing eyes.
Yeah. One is the color of the iris, the way his gaze, all of it. And he has this subtle menace. Cillian Murphy has this ability to make you feel threatened without outwardly showing it, right?
Yeah.
He'll have a smile on his face, but you know he can slit your throat. And that energy that he gives off suits perfectly for his character in Red Eye, and it makes full use of it, right? I mean, nothing against the rest of the characters. I think it has, her dad is played by Brian Cox, if I remember correctly. So all great actors, but Cillian Murphy makes that movie.
It's been an age since I've seen Red Eye. I watch it on television. I don't think I've sat through it in one sitting. I've seen it in bits. And the whole claustrophobic nature of the film is also plays a huge part, because you're on that plane, right? And it's two people sitting sat next to each other, and it makes for a very taut thriller. So, I mean, there's not much that I remember of it. It's been a while. It keeps coming back in conversation given his recent Oscar run and our last episode, which we released on the day on the Oscars. So, but I don't know. There's not much I really can add to Red Eye. Film that time forgot till he won his Oscar. Now it's kind of come back into the...
I'm surprised as to why it's not better.
Because I don't think, because Wes Craven himself is known for such entities, right? He has Nightmare on Elm Street and he has the Scream films and The Hills Have Eyes. Those are three potential franchises that people can retire with one franchise, never mind three.
Yeah.
And Wes Craven has three. So it's like the little small films he did in the middle tend to get swept under the rug.
But for those of you who haven't, this is definitely a movie you should catch.
It's been a while. I should watch this.
It's a brisk 90 minutes, I think, or less even. So it won't take up too much of your time, but you'll enjoy every minute of it.
All right. Let's move on to mine. Should I go Bollywood? Should I go Hollywood? What should I do?
Go Bollywood.
Okay, let's go Bollywood. this is a film that, again, I was reminded of recently because if the podcast has it aged well. I saw a friend of the show, Suchin Mehrotra, was on the episode discussing this film. And I was like, oh yeah, that's a movie I have religiously watched through the years for no apparent reason than just pure entertainment value. That is 2010's Break Ke Baad, starring Imran Khan and Deepika Padukone. Imran Khan kind of disappeared off the scene for some time. And he came back. And I think one of the few things he posted about was how people have been reacting to the film in the last decade or so. When it was first released, it was badly reviewed. And Imran Khan spoke about how every time he saw this film, he was reminded of those bad reviews. But now he looks back and he sees people who find that relationship very endearing. And I mean, for a while, I did as well. And then I grew up, but we'll get into it. So Break Ke Baad tells the story of this couple. I think what's his name? Abhay and Alia, who have been together for the longest time. And then Alia decides to move to Australia to pursue a career because she wants to get away from her mom and just generally from her local surroundings in Delhi. I don't blame her, it's Delhi. So, and then when she gets there, Abhay tries to like hold on to the relationship, and then she kind of calls things off. And then he lands there, and they kind of have exist in each other's spaces while living their lives and becoming independent people. That's in a nutshell what this movie is about. It's very straightforward. It's like boy girl have conflict, go on to find themselves, boy girl reunite. That's basically the premise of this film. And it's not a spoiler. It's a done and dusted formula. There's something oddly endearing about the film. In a cute way. Yes, it is toxic as hell. Some people are like, I was watching it in preparation for this episode, and I was like, this movie is a little bit like, some people need to learn to let go, and the others need to stop letting them, stop stringing people along. Like, it's pure Indian toxic relationship culture on display, but for the modern era. It's still somehow, but because it's cute and it's got some nice little moments in there and a great soundtrack to boot, it kind of makes for a fun viewing because you can kind of look at it from the outside in and just be like, yeah, if this were real life, we'd probably have to call the cops on somebody at some point. But because it's in a film and it's contained, it's all good.
Wow, I haven't watched the movie. I'm just... I'm trying to imagine Imran Khan's talking to Deepika Padukone in Australia.
It's exactly what you think it is. They live, so he ends up living in the same house she does. And they become friends.
That's not stalking, dude. That's home invasion.
No, because the homeowners really take a liking to him.
I can already see what kind of movie this is.
Yeah. And then he kind of starts off a business and, you know, it just becomes a whole thing. I don't know if you remember this. This is the scene. This is the movie where the both of them are sitting underneath the table. They're like, there's a table and they both sat underneath it and they're like holding each other. If you see the image, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Probably.
Yeah, so this was those 5-6 Imran Khan rom-coms that came off the back of Jaane Tu Ya Jaane Na.
Which was that one with Sonam Kapoor?
I hate love stories. Very bad.
Yeah.
Oh, Bintari is from there, is it?
It's the only thing I know about that movie, honestly.
Wow, I watched that movie in theaters. It was very bad.
I heard after Imran Khan retired now he's coming back and stuff, but after he quit Bollywood, somebody who's friends with his friend, or like third degree connector, thing is this was his daily routine. He would get up at around 10, 11, have a leisurely breakfast, then smoke a joint, walk around his neighborhood for like 3-4 hours, just meeting people, chitting, you know, chit-chatting, chilling. He'd have a coffee somewhere, come back home by around 3:34, have a late lunch, sleep again. Evening, get up, read a little, watch some TV, have dinner and go back to sleep. Right? It's can't be a daily routine, bro. Is there such a thing as too chill? Yes, there is.
Yeah, I think he Gori Tere Pyar Mein was probably his last film, and he was like, I'm done with this shit. And Katti Batti, I think Katti Batti was what really sent him over the edge. Sounds like a chill routine. I mean, not gonna lie. Imagine if you have the luxury to do it, it would get a little boring.
Literally, dude, I'd do it for a week and then I'd shoot myself. Man. What the fuck?
Anyway, you haven't seen this movie. I recommend Poonam. This is a Poonam movie. Poonam, you must watch this film.
I will tell her. Okay. Going on to my last film. I want to talk about this 1999 film called 10 Things I Hate About You, starring Heath Ledger, not Claire Danes. I always confuse her with Claire Danes.
Julia Stiles.
I always confuse it. Heath Ledger, Julia Stiles, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, David Krumholtz. And
David Krumholtz is in this? Oh, shit. Oh, yes, he is. Yeah.
He's his friend. So, again, this is sort of like the movie version of Freaks and Geeks, where you have a lot of people who would go on to become famous to varying degrees, finding their first break or, you know, their first role, which sort of propelled them to some degree of visibility. This is a reimagining of Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew. That's what the story is based on. Very briefly, it's about this girl who is sort of played by Julia Stiles, is an iconoclast, sort of wants to be anti-establishment and you know, stuff like that. Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays this new guy who's come to a high school, and he falls for this girl who is Julia Stiles' sister. So it's a slightly complicated plot, but in order for Joseph Gordon-Levitt to be able to date the girl he likes, Julia Stiles needs to go out with somebody else. So Joseph Gordon-Levitt pays Heath Ledger to convince order to take her out. Again, I don't want to get into the nitty-gritties of the story. It's a rom-com. Things happen very high school-y. It's crude in parts. It's not highbrow fiction, but there's a certain charm to it, right? Like, we've seen high school comedies that can be made really badly. For some reason, there is a certain ineffable charm to it. I think a lot of it can be attributed to Heath Ledger.
Yes. Oh my man, the man is so good looking.
Yeah.
I promise you, I'm not sweating because of Heath Ledger. It's really hot. But if I were to be sweating in the cool room, it would be of Heath Ledger.
And at so many points in the movie, there are where he just looks at Julia Stiles and he has that Heath Ledger smile, right? It's like sly grin smile, whatever. It's a mix of all of those. At that point, whenever he gives that, I'm like, you know, she's gonna agree to whatever you're saying.
Dude, when he plays that song, this is taking me back to my first relationship. Yeah, the Frankie Valli, can't take my eyes off of you. Oh my goodness, with the whole marching band and everything.
Yeah. And that scene itself is
hilariously parodied in Not Another Teen Movie.
I've seen it.
Yeah, Chris Evans' character plays Jenny's Got a Gun. On the bleachers, yeah.
In fact, I would say that scene has been parodied in a lot of TV shows, cartoons. So, if anything, that's probably the longest lasting contribution of that movie to pop culture. But just generally, yeah, great turn by Joseph Gordon-Levitt as well. He plays this earnest but appropriately horny high school teenager. David Krumholtz is a great comic foil. He has a great sense of comic timing. So he always brings the laughs. If anything, what the movie got right is casting, right? That is the strength of the movie. They've got a great cast of characters. Decent enough music, decent enough dialogue. I mean, nothing in that department stands out. But on the whole, it's just a very nice feel-good watch. So this could fit as much in feel-good movies. This could fit as much in rewatchable junk food. I mean, all of these are different takes on a similar sort of vibe, right? So this movie fits right into all of them.
You know, as you were talking, describing the film, and you mentioned Taming of the Shrew, I realized why I'd forgotten. And now I realized why I suggested doing a part two to junk food movies, because I wanted to talk about Anyone But You, and I completely forgot about it. Because again, Anyone But You is a very loose adaptation of the Shakespearean story, Midsummer's Night Dream. Midsummer Night's Dream. And I was like, oh shit, never mind. That's a film for another episode, because that is prime junk food film.
Yeah, I mean, it fits in junk food because you have two absolute snacks in the movie.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Yes. I mean, you should watch it. Have you seen it yet?
No, I haven't.
Have you seen it? Okay. We have corrected your issues. You can watch it now. But yeah, 10 Things I Hate About You is, again, that's quintessential true. 90s rom-com, has been around for ages. You ask the women in our lives and generally the women in general about the film, and they can't stop gushing about Heath Ledger. And rightly so. Joseph Gordon, like, again, a who's who, as you mentioned. It's a movie I haven't seen in some time, but I can see the appeal as to why it could be perfectly categorized as a junk food film.
Yes.
But yeah, let's move on to the final movie on this list, which I had no idea had such an impact on my life. And I was watching this film and I was like, oh, there are things in, from this movie I quote on a semi-regular daily basis. And that is 2004's Eurotrip. Eurotrip is the story of this dude named Scott who gets dumped by his girlfriend, and on a night where he starts
Scotty
to...
Scotty doesn't know.
And on a night... That night he gets really drunk and he kind of yells at his pen pal Mike. In the morning he wakes up to realize there's a girl, German girl named Mika. Understanding his folly, he decides to run to Europe to meet her, and Tag takes a bunch of friends along. Some of them are already there, but he takes Cooper, his best friend, along, and chaos ensues. Yeah, this movie's biggest contribution to society is the song Scotty Doesn't Know and the whiplash that is Matt Damon's appearance in this film.
Yeah.
Oh, hilarious. It's one of the... Let's watch it again. I watched it last night in preparation for this episode. So many things. Oh, this isn't where I park my car. I need to piss like a pregnant woman. All of the shit comes from this movie. And it's so stupid, but so hilarious. Like, it's... There are some things in here that have not aged well, that will not stand the test of time in 2024. But oh my God, is it hill? This is so stupid and it's so funny.
The two parts I remember, one is the whole scene with Fred Armisen, and then in the...
Oh, yeah.
every tunnel is like increasing. Scoozy. He's just like increasingly lewd, and I would say sexual assaulty, not even lewd.
And the other thing, I mean, one of the things that I was looking forward to this most was, this film taught me that David Hasselhoff was a huge pop star in Germany, which I had no idea of.
That's something I also took away from this movie. Precisely that fact. I did not know that before the film. The other scene, the whole dominatrix scene is insanity on screen. I'm just like, what? Firstly, as I was younger, obviously, when I watched him, like, I was like, how is this allowed to be in a movie, like, filmed on screen? Because
this happened in the year Hostel released, so it was like, here's the comedic version, and here is the horror version. And insane, what is this? There's Vinnie Jones as the hooligan
in the end. What is the other big sequence that I'm forgetting? The whole Bratislava, the whole Bratislava. He gives him $0.50 and the waiter is like, I'll open my own hotel. Fuck you, I quit. I was like, what? And for years, I haven't been to Slovakia. Hmm. I always get confused between the two. Slovakia. I haven't yet been to Slovakia, but I know if and when I go there, it's going to be irresistible for me to make some reference to the Eurotrip, right? And for no fault of the source, I have a very low opinion of the city, despite having been not been to it, just because of these 5 minutes of the movie.
I don't know. I can't pronounce the guy's name. Rade, whatever. Yeah, the Serbian actor. Boris the Blade. Boris. Yeah. He pops up. He's like, hey, Miami Vice is the greatest show on television. And of course, the Bratislava nightclub where... I still can't believe, I mean, this movie, the sequence between Jenny and her brother. It's so graphic. I was just like, what the hell? I cannot believe. As I was like, there's something here I've forgotten about. And then as the nightclub sequence kicks in, I'm just like, oh, yes. Oh, this is about to get disgusting because it's so in your face. What's worse, and I'm not a religious man by any stretch of the imagination, is what happens in the Vatican. Generally, this is an advertisement for how Americans are the worst tourists, followed by us. Probably.
But Chinese, they go to the... Chinese are the worst tourists. I mean, since you raised the point, it's a quick segue, they are the worst tourists. Okay, moving on.
Oh, really? Okay. Top three. anyway, so the whole Vatican sequence with when he meets Mika and they go at it in the confession booth. This is another thing. This is the film that taught me about how new popes are elected. So I watched this. One is when you ring the bell of San Marco, and then it announces the Pope is dead, and white smoke, which is to indicate the new Pope has been elected. So much shit this movie does, dude. It is so unabashedly crude that I miss it. And Fred Armisen, you keep bringing back up, I keep thinking about it, I keep laughing. It's so disgusting.
Last when he's literally sitting in their lap or something, the guy's lap.
And he licks his face like because he's dreaming about Mika and David Hasselhoff is singing in the background. Oh yeah, and of course, there's when he goes to visit his her family, her younger brother is some big Hitler fan, so he's walking around doing the
same. Oh yeah. There's a lot of random. So Eurotrip is not one of those scary movie types, parody movie type things, but it almost feels like one because there are a lot of random things that have somehow been stitched together, right? Like your Scary Movie and Not Another Teen Movie, they don't even have a pretense at story anymore. They're just gag after gag. Eurotrip is like gag after gag, but there is a semblance, a thread somehow holding on to, holding it all together. That's why so many times in my head, I sort of confuse it as part of that pack of shit movie. Collectively shit movies. Hmm. Then I remember, no, it actually has a story and it's actually funny. It's not one of those movies.
Yeah, it's not the best rated. It's stupid and it's very hilarious. And Scotty doesn't know, just gets progressively more controversial with each lyric.
Yeah, like, Scotty doesn't know is a masterpiece.
I think in terms of like best plot twist, is probably up there, right? Because nobody expected Matt Damon to show up in a movie in a teen comedy. But yet
actually,
there he is.
Matt Damon, if you look at it, has a history of unexpected cameos, right? You have this, you have Interstellar. Interstellar is a little more than a cameo, but you have Thor, Ragnarok. So it's not the first time. Matt Damon, I think, loves popping in and out for a couple of minutes and just leaving the audience wondering, what the fuck?
But I mean, even all those films, Interstellar is like a more philosophical performance, right? Because he's Dr. Mann. and here he's an actor, but I've never seen Matt Damon as like this punk rock, steal your girl kind of guy.
That's true.
And Kristen Kreuk, who plays Lois Lane, Lana Lane, Lana Lane, I think it's Smallville. That song if you listen to the full song by Lustra, it just gets progressively more hilarious as you listen to it.
Gets progressively more graphic, more lewd, more hilarious, all of it.
At some point, you can hear the guy laughing. When he rhymes trusting with thrusting, I was just like, dude.
I think he's like, how much can I get away with?
Yeah. And the answer is a lot. It's on Prime Video. If you haven't seen it in some time, it's like, you can go check it out. It's pretty fucking hilarious.
Yeah. But yeah, that's it. Those are our junk food movies for the Soul Part 2.
That's us for this week's episode. We'll see you on the next one. We'll probably be back to like a solo film the next time. We haven't done one of these.
Yes, let's do a deep dive. It's been a while.
Let's do a deep dive once more. But okay, this is our junk food special for you. Once again, delivered. Thanks for watching, listening wherever you are. Take care. We'll see you soon.